Redbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota on Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit toyotaonnicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com.
And welcome to this special edition of the Catholic Man Show. I am Adam Minahan, sitting here with David Niles in the studio. This is a, like I said, a special edition, Dave, because we have a guest. We're not going to follow our original format that we have of our show. Every once in a while, we try to talk to a man of a craftsman of, you know, some guy that's exuding manliness of some sort.
Totally.
And this is one of those shows. We found a guy that I actually follow on Instagram. And so this is a little bit of a different show.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. We have on the line with us Mr. Liam Hoffman. He is a man who literally pounds molten metal into submission with a hammer and maybe other tools. He can tell us. But anyway, Liam, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for that introduction. I'm glad to be here, Adam and David. Appreciate it.
Do you ever use your fist? Like, the hammer's not getting it done. I'm just gonna pound it with my fists.
I haven't tried that myself, and I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah.
Well, maybe give it a shot, but don't
have your assistant do it. Have a guy that you're
good idea.
Yeah, not that, you. But
that's what employees are for.
Right, exactly. No.
Punch
you
that.
Get it. Yeah, you exactly. You understand it. That's exactly how it is.
Okay, so Liam, there's a lot of things that I want to talk to you about. But before we get actually going into the forging process, your book, which is Forged, A Guide to Becoming a Blacksmith.
Wait, I didn't actually say, but when he's a blacksmith. Liam, you're a blacksmith, right? Is that what you
right.
are? Okay.
Okay.
Yes.
I just implied it. I didn't actually say it.
Okay. And
just
yeah, it is good to
alleviate confusion.
Yeah, to clear the air. But Liam, you are about 21 years old in North Carolina. Tell us a little bit about, you have a fascinating story about how you got into blacksmith and forging. Tell us a little bit about it.
To me, I guess it's sort of boring, but I started when I was 13 and I was on summer break. And I live in the mountains, and there's not much to do here other than, you know, hiking and stuff, which I love to do. But I was bored, so I started hammering on a piece of aluminum I found at, say, like lunchtime. And then I found that interesting, and I started a campfire and started hammering on some steel. And then by the end of that same day, I had my first knife. And it's evolved from there. When I was 14, my dad had a little coal forge built and started building me a shop. And, you know, by the time I was in my junior and senior year of high school, I was putting everything I earned back into my business. I was working about 35 hours a week after school. By the time I graduated high school, I had a fairly complete shop paid for, and just kept building it from there.
Wow. 35 hours a week after school. That's a lot.
Yeah. That's some work ethic right there, man.
Well, you get home about 4 o'clock, you work till 8, and then you do weekends, and it's just, it didn't feel like work. It was just fun.
Well, that's good.
It needs to be if you're going to do that much of it. Okay. So Liam, I sell forgings for a living. I'm a manufacturing rep, so I sell forging castings and forgings for a living.
So
I know a little bit about forging. I know more about the rolled ring side of forgings than like open die and closed die forgings. Like what you do, but let's just talk just basics of here's a forging 101. Here's how you get from a ingot to an axe.
And what are all these terms that he's using.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Good idea.
Okay. So I guess forging in a nutshell. So, I mean, when steel is heated to 1450 degrees all the way up to, it melts around 2300, depending on the alloy, it's malleable. You could picture it sort of like clay, except it's much harder than clay. But it's the way I like to think of it is like a potter, but you can't use your hands. Other tools are your hands, which make it a lot more difficult and a lot more dangerous. But forging is just a process of manipulating a shape into another shape through the use of hammer and tong and anvil. A lot of people don't understand exactly how soft that hot steel is until they actually hammer it. But I like to tell people that it's about the same hardness as cold aluminum. So it's not like, you know, it's like Play-Doh. It's a little hard, but it's just soft enough to where you can move it. And, you know, you learn the different techniques of how to move the metal in a certain direction. And then once you start to get an understanding of those, you can just look at a lump of steel and stretch it and pull it and push it in whichever direction you need to, just like you're sculpting with clay.
Okay, and you typically kind of hang out with or make axes and knives. Is that kind of your forte? Is typically axes and knives? Like, is that what your niche is?
Yeah, axes especially. Axes are definitely my niche. I do custom knives also, but I make about 70 axes for every one knife. So it's not, I make far fewer knives than axes, but I like knives and axes equally.
So let me ask you this. What is the difference between, are all axes forged? If I just go to Lowe's and get an axe, is it going to be a forged product?
It depends on the manufacturer, but typically it's going to be drop forged, which is a closed die drop forging process. So you've got like two different dies. You take a solid piece of steel, a giant drop hammer, gravity fed, comes down, squishes it front into, you know, makes a dramatic change in one hit, and then they flip over to the other die, and one more hit, and the axe is done. Which the actual process of drop forging doesn't affect the steel negatively. It's still forging, but typically the lower quality comes into play just from the materials that they use, the finishes that they use, the safety hazards that you come across in mass distribution. Axes at Lowe's don't come sharp. Like, you buy an axe for me, and you can shave your face with it when you come out of the box. They can't do that for legal reasons. Axe handles at Lowe's come with varnish on them for consumer, you know, distribution reasons. Because if they didn't, they'd be dirty from transportation, and varnish is not something that you want a tool handle. So ultimately, you're getting a tool that's not even useful. It's not even what it's supposed to be made for, just because of the nuances in manufacturing and distribution. So you're not getting, you know, an axe. And now the consumer, for the most part, sees an axe as one object that's not really an axe. You know, when you get like a real axe and you use it, it's like it's not even the same tool that you're used to.
So I'm being lied to. That's
basically
that's my takeaway here.
That's basically it.
I'm being lied to.
Liam, one of the things that I absolutely love about your axes, outside of it, they're just axes, and I'm our listeners know that I'm a big fan of axes in general. But is the craftsmanship that your axes have? It's the hickory wood handles.
The handles look awesome.
Those are epic.
They look almost as cool as the axe head themselves, I think.
And you,
yeah, I mean, they're just as important.
Do you make the handles as well?
Yeah, from scratch.
I saw a video of you using one of your axes, and there was about a 2.5 inch diameter limb, maybe a 3 inch diameter limb, and he took one swing with his axe and was about 2 centimeters away from going all the way through it.
Wow, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, we did that just a few days ago. It was a maple tree, and I was just trying to demonstrate, like, this is what a real ex does, you know?
Yeah.
But
and that just comes down to the geometry of the edge and everything.
So let me also ask you this. The forging process, this is about the extent of the knowledge I possess of forging. I know that I have forged golf clubs and that they hit the ball further. Okay, that's all I know. what does it do to the metal? Like, is it stronger after you forge it?
I think you got like a placebo effect going on.
I'm telling you, could be, nobody knows. It could be anything. I have golf clubs.
That's good marketing. Golf clubs have good marketing.
Well, I will tell you, I'm comparing them to the golf clubs I had before were very cheap.
Yeah.
So
there's probably other things at play here, but
definitely
forging doesn't actually improve the steel at all. If anything, you have the ability to cause problems if you don't know how to forge and heat treat. So like when you see a tool and it says forge, that's just marketing. Like almost any piece of steel or tool that you're going to get nowadays is forged in some capacity or another, if it's not cast. And the forging doesn't like impart good qualities on the steel.
No, but what they forgings do are, a lot of people at least say that forgings are better than castings because you eliminate a lot of porosity issues. I know you can get
That's true.
You can get hot tears and things like that with forgings, but I mean, mainly with the difference between castings and forgings is you're worried about the casting cooling down and air pockets and things like that getting into the mold, making the part less strong.
Mm.
Yeah, ultimately forging is going to be the best. Give you the best results, but forging steel doesn't make it better.
Mm-hmm.
Forged steel is better than cast steel, though.
Right, but it's all about the alloy, right? It's all about what metal you're actually starting with.
If you take axes, for instance, the things in the axe head that make it cut well and last and hold an edge for a long time are going to be the alloy of steel used, the way it's heat treated, and the way that the tool is sharpened or shaped. Because the geometry of the cutting edge affects the life of the cutting edge just as much, if not more, than the heat treat and the steel used. So you can have one thing right, but still not have the other parts, and it doesn't work any better.
Right. So, and heat treating is whenever you put it back in, after you have the form, you put it back into the heat and it makes the tensile is strengthened. Is that correct?
Heat treating is usually a four-step process. Typically, what everyone thinks of is tempering or the quench, which, and they confuse them as one thing, whereas the whole heat treating process, and they're actually two individual things in a five or four step process. So there's, after you forge it, you normalize it, which basically redistributes the grains in the steel, makes it normal, which reduces weakness. And then you do your grinding typically, and then you go for a hardening process, which turns the steel into hard steel. And then at that point, it's too brittle because it's so hard. So that's what tempering is, which is actually reducing the hardness. And all of these steps involve heating the steel back up, just to different temperatures for different lengths of time.
Have you tried working
each
with...
Steel,
oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Each steel has a different recipe. Each steel has a different heat treating recipe. So there's hundreds of different types of steel. Each one is different with heat treating.
Have you tried working with any vibranium? I hear... Wakanda is sitting on a boatload of it.
I haven't gotten my hand on any of that yet.
You need to go to Africa, my friend.
I'm going in July. Maybe I'll bring some back.
Swing by Wakanda.
Yeah.
I'll be sure to.
You will not regret it. Yeah. I promise.
Liam, do you consider yourself somewhat of an artist? I mean, I was looking at some of the different axes that you have, and there's a lot of different shapes and styles of axes. And I read on your blog that, or on your website, that You've never been to an official forging class, a formal forging class before. It's all been kind of a learning process for you. Do you consider yourself somewhat of an artist?
Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. I don't know. I don't know if I exactly understand what the full definition of an artist is. A lot of people throw around that word in knife making, and seems to be like half of the people think that knife making is not being an artist, and half of people think that it is being an artist, or axe making, whatever it may be, in bladesmithing. And
bladesmithing. Yes.
Yeah.
That is my new favorite word.
And I mean, I think there's parts of it that have artistic qualities, but bladesmithing is just an interesting thing because it's such a physical, like dirty, trade, using big equipment and dangerous tools. And then you're producing something that is beautiful in shape and function. So I guess I would consider part of what I do to being like artistic work, but I don't know if I could ever say that I'm an artist for a living or anything.
Yeah,
I can definitely tell you are. It looks to me like you are an artist of a couple genres, not only artist of bladesmithing, but possibly an artist of manliness.
Which is
I've heard that.
Well, and that's coming from Mr. Humility himself.
I'm just saying, from what I can see, it looks like that's what you're doing. And sir, I respect it.
Yeah. So Liam, let me ask you this. You've got people who are coming to you because you were on a reality show. Is that a reality contest show on the History Channel, Forged by Fire? Is that correct?
Forged in fire.
And you killed it. I mean, you whooped like a guy who was a world renowned blacksmith. Right? Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, I'm really glad you said
master bladesmith.
Really glad you said yes, Liam. That would have been very awkward if you'd have said no.
Okay. Well, actually, I lost.
Yeah.
really awkward.
So, tell
the
us
guy
about
that
it.
I went against was a American Bladesmith Society master bladesmith, of which there are only about 120 of in the entire world. So, my luck.
Are you a master bladesmith? I mean, what does it take? I mean, is there an official accreditation for that?
Yeah, there is. I am not even close to a master smith. There's a organization called the American Bladesmith Society, and they give out that rank. You have to go, you join your apprentice, you don't have to do any qualifications, and then you test for journeyman smith, and then you test for master smith, and then in the journeyman smith and the master smith, there's a performance test and a judging test. And the performance test, you may have seen it or heard of it before. It's where they take the knife, they clamp it in a vise, and they bend it 90 degrees without it breaking.
Wow.
And then there's a few other things in the performance test, like cutting a 2x4, but they're not as cool as bending it in half. And then you do the judging test, which is you submit 5 knives to a group of master smiths, and they determine whether or not your work is good enough to get journeyman smith or master smith.
Okay, so
do you plan on doing that anytime?
Yeah, I'm actually going to be testing for journeyman smith this June.
Oh,
nice. All right, so it's coming up.
Yeah, it's really, really fast. I'm not ready for it yet.
So let me ask you this. I think I can fall into this idea of like romanticizing the idea of being a blacksmith. You know, it's been around for thousands and thousands of years, forging axes and knives, and the idea of like getting out there and using your hands all day and pounding metal, and you know, just like the idea of feeling a sense of an accomplishment at the end of the day, because you can look over and say, look, this is the things that I did today, and it's tangible, and I created them with my hands. Is that something that is kind of a false narrative? Like, is that something that I, is that really reality or is that just kind of a perception?
No, that's reality.
Oh.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm so glad you said that.
So you absolutely, I mean, so like, at, you know, the idea of being a blacksmith in your eyes is
as awesome as it sounds.
Is as awesome as it sounds.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome when you look back at it. But I mean, when you do it for a living, of course, part of it is a job and part of it gets old. But at the same time, it's awesome. So some of it I take for granted nowadays, but every now and then I can step back and look at the shop and it looks like something that came from the 1700s or something. It's just cool. And for me to be able to use that to earn a living is just, in 2018, is just weird. It's cool. Yeah.
Okay, so on that note, how did you get, I mean, okay, it's one thing to have a forge and be able to do this stuff. It's another thing to actually get to the point where you can start selling it and you build a reputation. What was it like in the beginning when you were just getting started? How did you turn this into a living?
Very slowly. There was no pressure. There was no pressure when I was first starting out. And this is why I encourage people who are still in high school to do this, because it's like the best time for you to start gathering equipment because you don't have any expenses. But, I mean, I started selling stuff when I was 15, and I would make anything that someone would pay me for. And when I started out, I was making jewelry, all sorts of tools, all sorts of knives, axes. I was doing farmers' tools, like garden stuff, knickknacks, like anything that someone would buy. And then, you know, I would sell a little bit more, get a little bit more reputation, get a little bit more money, a little bit more independence in what I want to make, until it narrowed itself down over time, over about 5 years of selling stuff, to where now I only make axes, knives, and some hammers, and I get to decide exactly what, how many, what type, and how much I want to sell it for. And it just happened really organically. There's no big secret to it, but, you know, working hard and making something that is better than the norm. It's that simple. If it's, you know, make something that's better, there's no point in you trying to compete with Walmart. It
right.
won't work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So make something that's good, make a lot of it, and just be consistent. And over time, it grows.
So let me ask you this. I'll ask you about an axe, just because I think it could be the answer. Your answer could be different for a lot of these knives. But how long does it take, start to finish, to produce an axe?
Totally. I mean, it totally depends on the axe. Some uh-huh. of the axes, like I'm doing a collaboration right now with a friend of mine for the Blade Show in June, and we're doing a set of like Scandinavian style axes with Damascus steel edges and exotic wooden handles, like rosewood and purple heart handles. And it's going to be ridiculous. And it's going to take us, well, I'm sure we'll have over 200 man hours into it probably.
Wow. That is a lot.
Knives. Yeah. You'll typically have 20 to 80 hours in a knife.
Okay.
Yeah. So, that's a lot.
Just you're talking about material cost of Damascus steel. We're using wrought iron, exotic wood. If you get into knife making, fossilized woolly mammoth, ivory, mother pearl, gold, silver, exotic woods, it gets expensive.
Yeah. In a hurry.
Wait, when you say fossilized yeah. woolly mammoth ivory, is that really what it is? Like, it's really
yeah.
the tusk yeah. of a woolly mammoth.
Just any part or any bone. Fossilized woolly mammoth ivory, yeah.
How many freaking woolly mammoths do they still have?
Yeah. Where are we keeping these things?
Is there like an Amazon fulfillment center that's got, oh, that's the woolly mammoth Amazon place.
They're all digging them up or something. I don't know.
That's awesome.
There's like, it's not rare. It's expensive, but there you can get it.
I can't get it. I've never seen a woolly mammoth bone. They've never just, you know. That's incredible.
That is absolutely incredible. Liam, there's a guy here in our, we're in Tulsa, and there's a deacon here in Tulsa who has some land outside of Tulsa, and he has some kids, and he's teaching his children how to forge. And it's really cool to see some of the things that he's making, you know, he actually just got a bigger anvil that I think he got up to a 100-pound anvil now, like, which I think you have much bigger than that. But I'm just saying, like, if a guy says, okay, this is really cool, this is something that I want to do, I want to at least attempt to try to make an axe for myself or a knife for myself or a hammer or something like that. What are like the bare essentials and what should they be looking out for? And then you can push your book because that's kind of what your book is all about as well.
So the essentials are easy. It's just hammer, tongs, anvil, and fire. Four things. And once you've got that stuff, then you can make anything, essentially. So you'll start making different types of punches and drifts and fullers and top tools, which all just help you manipulate the steel in different ways more accurately than just swinging a hand hammer can. But you can make all of those tools yourself with the four essential tools. But the book, I published a book right after Christmas this year, 2017, Christmas 2017. And the point of the book is to kind of address what you just asked me. It goes over the essentials, what is essential, what is luxury, how much they cost, where to get them. I talk about shop sizes, if you have this space, this is what you can expect to get from it. Just plain and simple, because there's a lot of people out there that ask me questions like this. They don't have a grasp for what they need, how much space they need, or how much money they need to spend. So I just put all of that out there, black and white. You do this, you spend this much, this is what you can expect to get from it. And that's like the first half of the book. It's information that can be found in most other blacksmithing books. But the second half of the book is where I think it stands out from other books. And I talk about how to teach yourself. And a lot of my book is more on the philosophies of craftsmanship, working hard, and blacksmithing. And you could replace the word blacksmithing or hammer with any other trade, like leatherworking or woodworking or whatever you want. You could replace the words for any trade, and the things I talk about in this book would translate over. So I talk about how to teach yourself, because in 2018, you're not really able to go apprentice under a master blacksmith for 10 years without pay. Like, mm-hmm. No one can do that nowadays. That just doesn't happen, which is how it used to happen. But now we don't have any other way, typically, to learn how to blacksmith if we don't know how to teach ourselves. And it might sound simple, teach yourself, go out there and do it. But there's certain things that you can do and avoid while teaching yourself that make the process go faster. And looking back on how I did it in the hindsight, I developed and just talked about, you know, how I think everyone should go about it. The point of the book is to just get you started with as few mistakes as possible. I mean, of course, you want to make mistakes, which is one of the things I talk about in the book, because that's how you learn.
Right.
But, you know, there's philosophies in this book and lessons in this book that just aren't in other blacksmithing books.
Mm-hmm. Is there one thing that you can think of for someone who might be getting started that you would say, definitely don't do this? You might think that you should do this. Don't do it. Is there anything?
Spending a lot of money.
Okay. So it's
that's a good answer.
It's not like, don't turn your back on the whatever. It'll blow up.
They'll learn that from trial and error.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's how you learn.
I mean, I was thinking about something that
you don't do it again.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully you have a hand not to put in the fire.
that's how you learn. No, I would say don't spend a lot of money.
Okay. Okay.
That's a good answer too. So, I mean, so could you see a dad who has maybe a 10, 12 year old son, like that could be some good father son time to do together?
Yeah, there's it seems like that happens a lot. Like some people I meet online or at festivals and stuff, that you see like commonly a dad and his teenage son, and they both do it together.
Right now, Liam, even if I wanted an axe, I couldn't get one from you right now because you're so overbooked. Is that right? Like you haven't even opened up the store again?
Right. Yeah, we're extremely backlogged, and that's the main thing that we're working towards right now. We're still about 2 years backlogged, and
wow,
the orders have been shut down since October. And we're talking right now in April of 2018. I shut them down in October 2017, trying to catch up. I'm going to be opening up a very limited amount of orders at the end of June and then closing it down again. And then who knows? We're trying to work it down. I mean, the way that the axes are made can only be made at a certain speed. Otherwise, you're defeating the purpose of the whole product. You're basically going to the mass produced type product,
yeah,
which defeats the whole purpose of what I make. So it just is what it is.
It's a wonderful problem to have.
No kidding, man.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool, man. So, before we get off here, how can they get a hold of you? I've followed your Instagram account for over a year, but what are all the Instagrams and social medias and your website and everything else so that way people can find you?
Well, everything is Hoffman Blacksmithing. So Instagram, Facebook, website, YouTube, it's all Hoffman Blacksmithing. If you just Google that, it'll bring it up. My website is just HoffmanBlacksmithing.com.
Awesome, man. That's a good marketing, good branding.
I came up with the business name when I applied for my first festival when I was 15, and the form said business name. I was like, I don't have a business name. I'll just put Hoffman Blacksmithing. And then I was too lazy to change it, so that's what it is.
Yeah, it is.
That
yeah.
reminds me of another man, group, two men who were trying to come up with a name of a show, and it was like, well, it's a Catholic show for men. Let's call it the Catholic Man Show.
That is a true story. Yeah.
There's beauty in yep. simplicity.
There is beauty in simplicity. Yeah. Dave, is there anything else that you want to ask Liam before we let him go?
Can we be friends?
A Facebook request, I might accept it.
Yes.
He said might.
Might.
Said
I know. Might. Hey, so you're saying there's a chance.
There's a chance. Yeah,
right.
Hit him up on MySpace.
MySpace. Not even around anymore.
No, I don't know.
Do you even know what that is? Like being 21?
Yeah.
Like, do you
in
ever see it?
Middle school.
Middle school.
In middle school,
I was in college.
Was MySpace.
Great.
Yeah. Hey, Liam, I'm super grateful for you hanging out with us. It's late where you are, but I appreciate you carving out some time or forging some time to hang out with us.
It was fun. Thanks. I enjoyed it.
Absolutely.
All right, Liam. Keep doing your thing, man. We're big fans.
Yeah.
What you do is awesome.
Thank you, guys.
All right. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.
Redbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
We want to help others, especially in places of strife, such as the Holy Land, where Christianity is dwindling by the day. But how to help? Here's an easy way. Buying products through the Holy Land gift shop. Every product you purchase at myfranciscan.org/shop helps Christians support their families and stay in the Holy Land. Olive wood, embroidery, spices, and many more authentic products from the Holy Land are available right now at myfranciscan.org/shop. The Holy Land Gift Shop, bringing the Holy Land home.
I learned how many people we could help and how good you feel after you've helped others.
I know Lent is about giving, so I want to give.
These kids are talking about CRS Rice Bowl, a Lenten program known by generations of Catholic families. Children love it because they experience different cultures and gain a lasting impression of the people they are helping. You can bring CRS Rice Bowl into your home and experience the joy of seeing your children or grandchildren find new meaning in Lent. Visit crsricebowl.org to get started.
Rice Bowl inspired me to pray more and to pray for those who are less fortunate.
The Cincinnati Catholic Men's Conference is back. Tickets are on sale now for Saturday, April 28th at the Taft Theater at cincinnatimensconference.com or call 513-214-1534. The speaker conference roster is being hailed as one of the best lineups in the country. In rare appearances, come see Father Mitch Pacwa from EWTN, the man motivator Father Larry Richards, former Moeller High School and University of Notre Dame head football coach Jerry Faust, and the big celebrity keynote, Baz Rutten, UFC world champion, MMA world champ, and movie star. The conference theme is What It Means to Be a True Christian Man in Today's Society. Don't miss the incredible day of motivation, spiritual benefit, and fellowship with men from all walks of life. Get tickets now at cincinnatimensconference.com or call 513-214-1534. That's cincinnatimensconference.com or 513-214-1534. Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media. Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.